available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back at long last to the Podcast of Champions. I am still David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site, still on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm still Ryan Abraham, still from USCFootball.com. And we are still talking about all those teams that used to be in something called the Pac-12, formerly known as the Pac-12. We are the Podcast of Champions, and we got a very special guest. We're going to talk some
Colorado Buffalo
football this week with the great Adam Munster Tiger. Nobody does it better. Go check him out over at buffstampede.com. You can follow him on Twitter, AdamCM777. I don't know where that comes from, Adam, if you can explain that. But Adam, welcome to the show, man. How are you doing?
Well, Munster Tiger doesn't fit. There's too many characters, so I had to veer away from my full name as a Twitter handle. But no, it's great to be on with you guys. I'm happy to hear that this podcast is going to continue to go on. I mean, it was really the best thing of the Pac-12 was this podcast. I can't think of anything that was better from Colorado's experience, at least over 13 years in the conference. But yeah, no, it's great to be on with you guys.
Munster Tiger. I looked this up before you came on. Munster Tiger means charming. And what could be a better descriptor of Adam Munster Tiger than the word charming?
I'll take it.
You're breaking out the finery to us. I got to say, I don't get a camera feed. Ryan doesn't give me one.
Oh, my God.
So the first time I see our guest is when you, the viewer, sees our guest. He's wearing a fine shirt. I just got to compliment the shirt, right?
Yeah.
It's a good shirt.
You got to keep it classy for the POC.
It's true. It's true. I mean, look at us.
I definitely, you know, I got the jockey pants on too. Like,
I'm wearing my finest Carhartt.
Yeah, you do. You always do that. But I got my Pac-12 shirt, which is just vintage and stuff now. We didn't do a show. Amy said it's been a long 2 weeks. Yeah, we didn't do a show last week because I didn't plan it and David never plans it. So we just did that. But we wanted to, this is our last of the mountain schools. So we talked Arizona State, Utah, and now we're going to get Colorado. By the time we do our previews, we're going to be in the middle of spring ball because we got a lot of, you know, 12 teams to get to. But I guess we already did UCLA because they had, you know, Chip Kelly left for an OC job and stuff. They had some weird shit happen there. But we'll get to the rest of the conference stuff. But we want to talk some Colorado football because, you know, last year, the only spring game that was televised on ESPN was Colorado. Coach Prime just kind of turned everything upside down. And I guess not to be outdone, now like the sport itself is turning itself upside down. So like just everything is sort of going haywire and crazy. But I just want to get your thoughts, Adam, on how crazy this offseason was compared. I mean, nothing could beat last offseason for Colorado, but is this one coming close? Like in the top, you know, last 50 years, is this like number two? But yeah, what were your kind of thoughts on this offseason?
Well, it's almost like you're battle tested now, having covered the Coach Prime Buffs for a year, because it was such a whirlwind and a roller coaster. I mean, when they were 3-0 and you're walking into the stadium and The Rock walks by you, and then 5 seconds later, another celebrity is in your face. It kind of felt like I was living in a movie covering this program early on last season, and then obviously things kind of fell apart late in the season, especially after they blew that 29-point lead to Stanford. And so they went into the offseason and, again, turned over a lot of the roster, but it wasn't quite as dramatic as it was the first offseason when Coach Prime came in. So it's becoming kind of old hat covering Colorado quickly in terms of just the massive roster overhaul. And it's not a transfer class that has the headliner like Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders. And they had Colorado ranked as the number one transfer class in the country last year. But when you look back at the first transfer class that Coach Prime brought in, there were more risky takes in that group. It wasn't quite as deep as this year. They've gone after guys that have more starting experience, but they don't necessarily have the headlining quarterback or the two-way star in Travis Hunter at the top of that transfer class. But they've still added a lot of pieces, as Coach Prime said many times last year, especially when they were struggling through that losing streak. He said we're about 8 to 10 dogs away, and they're probably close to that. They still probably need to add another piece or two at linebacker during the spring transfer window. We'll see how some other positions shake out. It still sounds like they, even though they've overhauled that offense line already and got a lot of quality offensive linemen in, they still are going to look to add a couple more pieces there as well during that spring window. So the roster for Colorado football is this fluid entity that is just always changing seemingly. But because of the fact that non-graduates can't get into the portal right now, it's at least allowed for them to kind of catch their breath. And now we'll go into spring practices and get a better feel for kind of how this roster shakes out.
So 4-8 last year. And like, I guess there's two perspectives on it, because I think if you had realistic expectations before the season for Colorado, 4-8, more or less par, or maybe slightly above par. I mean, they were a 3.5 win total team going into last year, so they finished 4-8. So anybody who was betting the over, they got their over. But at the same time, they were losers of 8 of their last 9. What's the Colorado fan perspective on that season, the start of the Coach Prime era, and how this is projecting going forward?
Yeah, it is kind of complicated. And you guys watched how bad Colorado was in 2022.
Oh, yes.
Talked about it every week on your podcast.
So
it was unbelievable how bad that football team was. And I mean, they did kind of get lucky in their one win that season beating Cal. But when you look at just the scoring margin, it was one of the worst FBS teams in the history. So from that standpoint, 4-8, definitely was a step in the right direction. I really think if they played last season, like in a simulation, that they probably end up with more than 4 wins more times than not, because it was after that Stanford game, things kind of fell apart, and the offensive line, their confidence just got shattered last season. And, Shedeur Sanders was sacked 52 times, more than any other FBS quarterback. And then that's with him missing the last game and a half when his body just eventually broke down. But they had some of the pieces to do better than 4-8, honestly. But when your offensive line, their turnstiles, you're going to have a hard time getting success. And the offensive coordinator, Sean Lewis, who's now the head coach at San Diego State, and Shedeur didn't mesh very well. Sean Lewis wanted to go fast, up-tempo with a lot of choice routes, and it led to a lot of confusion, especially I think when you look at what Sean Lewis did at Kent State. He built that program up over time. They were 2-10 his first year at Kent State, trying to run that up-tempo scheme with choice routes where guys need to be kind of in that system for a while to gain that chemistry. And so it wasn't working at Colorado, and that's why they went to Pat Shurmur as the play caller for the last month of the season. So there were a lot of chemistry issues, and that's just going to happen when you overhaul the roster and you bring in a brand new staff. And so maybe the expectations shouldn't have been much more than that in year one. I think talent-wise, they still had maybe a 6-win team last year. But this year, bringing in another transfer class on top of it, now the expectations go to a higher level, because you've only got 1 year of Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter left, and then you've got to figure out who your quarterback is for the future. So they got to take advantage of this window that they have here in 2024.
So like year one, Coach Prime comes in, hires a staff, brings, and obviously the roster was, massive. We've never seen anything like that in college football. Then there was kind of some interesting moves with the, you mentioned, changing the coordinators there, but there were some like assistant coaching coordinator moves that were sort of like, oh, okay, it seemed like that was going to work. And What, so maybe kind of go over what the changes were for the coaching staff and kind of what your thoughts were, because some of them were a little, it was a little bit surprising, and maybe some of the timing as well.
Yeah, I alluded to some of this. It just was not working with Shedeur in Sean Lewis. It was, they didn't have a great chemistry, and that was not the system that as Shedeur Sanders got into the season, and there were breakdowns because guys didn't know what they were doing. He got frustrated, and Pat Shurmur is going to be interesting taking over as the offensive coordinator. Folks around here are kind of down on him because he was the OC for the Denver Broncos recently and didn't have a whole lot of success there. But he and Shedeur Sanders have really developed a great chemistry. And so they're kind of working hand in hand better than what you saw a year ago from Sean Lewis and Shedeur Sanders. And then, you know, they've got to become more balanced offensively this year. Last year, they were not ever able to get a consistent ground attack. And that's what partly allowed other teams to pin their ears back and just come after Shedeur Sanders. And so that's a big key for them. They're excited about Alton McCaskill, the fourth, a transfer running back from Houston that scored 18 touchdowns as a true freshman there. Last year, he was still kind of working his way back from an ACL. And he's a guy that they're pretty high on in the running game and think that's going to add more balance to what they were unable to do last year by basically being a pass-heavy team. Defensively, Charles Kelly was the defensive coordinator, and you saw that group get better as the season went along. There was still a lot of procedural issues that they had. I mean, the number of 12 men on the field penalties that they had was inexcusable, but it was a group that seemed to play pretty hard for Charles Kelly, but he is an Auburn guy. That's where he went to school. And he had really never lived in this part of the country before last year serving on Colorado staff. And so Auburn, the co-DC job opened up, and he just felt like he wanted to return back to his roots in the SEC. So they're filling his spot with Robert Livingston, who comes in after being the safeties coach for the Cincinnati Bengals for a long time. And this is an interesting hire because he's never been a defensive coordinator at any level before. This will be his first time running the show in terms of being the defensive coordinator, but he's learned under some really good defensive coordinators during his time at Cincinnati. And we haven't had a chance to talk to Coach Prime about this hire yet. The last time we've actually had a press conference with Coach Prime was after the Utah game in November. So I'm curious, what was it that sold him on Livingston? He obviously must've just blew the, you know, interview portion of kind of the vetting process away because he doesn't have that experience before, but he's a younger coach, and we'll see. It's definitely a question mark for them in terms of his lack of experience as a defensive coordinator.
It worked for UCLA last year with Danton Lynn. I mean, so maybe along the same lines of that, right?
Did we lose him?
Are you there, Adam?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, for Danton Lynn, like UCLA hires Danton Lynn, who was a good assistant that worked under good defensive coordinators in the NFL, and he had a really good year. So I think maybe that's what Coach Prime is thinking, kind of, you know, replicate those results.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. You got to get the experience by somebody giving you the job, right? So, but it's more of an unknown because he hasn't done it before. And you talk about 2024 just being this window that Colorado really needs to take advantage of with Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders. And so that's maybe what surprised folks was just that there is a little bit more of a risk when you hire somebody that hasn't done it before.
So there's a lot of change. I mean, I guess my big takeaway from all of that. So first, my impression of last season was that, yes, the defense played harder over the course of the season, but that the offense was actually the better part of the team. And maybe it's a reflection of, well, look at the talent they had at different spots, because on offense they had Shedeur Sanders, who was one of the most accurate quarterbacks. He was one of the most accurate quarterbacks in college football last year, for my money, given the pressure he was under, and all that talent at receiver. But the defense really, really struggled. And now it's two coordinator changes and a new conference next year. And as you keep pointing out, to take advantage of this last year of Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders, isn't this a ton of change to try to take advantage? I mean, what we've learned in college football over the years is unless you have an insane talent level, like truly top tier, continuity and experience is hugely, hugely important. So I guess it's kind of just a discussion topic, but like, what's the balance there? Because there's a lot of change coming, a bunch of new teams on the schedule, and then two new coordinator hires. That's a lot.
Yeah, there's no question about that. But, you know, at the same time, when you're 8 games into the 2023 season and it's just not going to work with Sean Lewis, you probably just need to cut bait, even though, you know, continuity is great from year one to year two. But if something's not working, you still got to change it. And so we'll see. You know, it is a little bit more the norm around college football because of the portal. Now you've got so many moving pieces. But yeah, ideally, you would have loved for Sean Lewis to come in, for that just to mesh, for that up-tempo scheme to work. It just didn't. So at least Shador and Shermer had that 4-week window working together, even though, you know, Shermer couldn't put in his whole offense that late in the season, but they at least got some of that experience defensively. I thought Charles Kelly did okay as the DC, but really, you know, that's not a coach that you were too worried about having to replace. And they have increased the defensive talent quite a bit through the portal this winter. They still, again, like I mentioned, they need to add a piece or two at linebacker to solidify that group. But there's a lot of, I mean, you're looking at a situation where it's 2 years at Colorado. You'd like some of the guys on the front line, and then there was basically no depth. Now you look at Colorado's defensive depth chart when I did my way too early depth chart predictions, and there's 3 deep of guys that you could see starting at a lot of different spots. And so that part of it's going to obviously breed competition, and you don't have the chemistry, the continuity. But again, that's kind of a lot of programs are dealing with that now. You know, so they're not necessarily alone in that, but there are a lot of moving parts. It's a lot of it's hard to make certain predictions about a team when there are so many of those question marks.
Dave alluded to it or talked about it going to a new conference, the Big 12, and the schedule came out a couple months ago. Out of conference, North Dakota State is coming to Boulder. Trip to Nebraska after Colorado beat Nebraska in Boulder last year, and then Colorado State playing at Fort Collins, and then going into the Big 12 schedule. You got Baylor early on, a trip to Central Florida, Kansas State coming to town, going to Tucson, Arizona, Cincinnati's coming around, a road trip to Texas Tech, Lubbock, Texas, Utah, the rival. From the Pac-12, going to Kansas, Oklahoma State coming to town, and then potentially the Big 12 championship game there. But what were your kind of thoughts when the schedule came out? What have Colorado fans thought about that first year in the Big 12, that schedule?
Well, I like that Utah is no longer the last game, so they can, like you kind of joked about there, they can stop trying to force that as a rivalry, because it's not anywhere near that. But yeah, you look at Oklahoma State and Kansas State, it's not the animosity that Colorado fans had back in the day towards like a Nebraska, but it's still cool to look at the schedule and go, oh yeah, there's a bit of a rivalry component there, because Colorado just never really developed that during its time in the Pac-12. And so, you know, finishing the season up against Oklahoma State, that should be a fun atmosphere. I'm anxious to, never traveled out to Orlando to cover a football game, so that'll be fun.
That's a trip, man. That's a trip.
Yeah. So new is kind of exciting, but, you know, I think ideally had the Pac-12 had the leadership and worked itself out, that would have been a better long-term situation for Colorado. But given how things played out, you know, this is at least a good landing spot with some history for Colorado.
Yeah.
So this Big 12 move, because I want to get the sense of this, because we've been asking Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, kind of what's the temperature? Because people had varied opinions from those different schools. Like Arizona fans, generally big fans of the move, largely for basketball reasons, being in a better basketball conference. Arizona State, on the other hand, not really. Utah, kind of in the middle. Colorado was the first, if I'm remembering correctly, first in the timeline after USC and UCLA to jump ship. So obviously there was some administrative push to do that. You talked about the familiarity with the schools, but there was obvious value in going to the Pac-12 initially. What's the mood? What's the temperature of the fan base in terms of going to the Big 12 from the Pac-12?
Yeah, the Pac-12, I think, is a better fit for Colorado the way it was, just from an academic standpoint. And certainly the Colorado fans enjoy those road trips out to the Bay Area in Los Angeles and in Arizona more than they're going to enjoy some of these trips that Ryan just ran down on the schedule this
Lubbock.
Year.
Beautiful Lubbock. So,
you know, but at the same time, the conference was a shit show the whole time Colorado was in it, right? And so at a certain point,
we're not blaming you. We're blaming the schools we cover because they were a shit show most of the time. So, yeah.
But, you know, it was just kind of ready to be over the nonsense that was the Pac-12 at a certain point. And it really was up until late in the process that Colorado's preference was to stay in the Pac-12. They weren't trying to leave, but as it became clear that they were just not going to have a competitive TV contract, that's when they made that move. And then, you know, ultimately led to three other schools joining them. But they wanted to stay in the Pac-12, but there is, I think, from a fan base, kind of that excitement that some of these Big 12 opponents that they're going to have, you have some history with, a little bit more of a rivalry feel. And then you get a little bit more of the atmosphere of college football when you go to those towns. And, you know, as much as I do love going to the Bay Area, it's a wine and cheese type deal. And you don't get that feeling that Colorado was used to in the old Big 12 and the old Big 8. And so that part of it, I think fans are kind of excited to get back into a part of the country that seems to be a little bit more intense about college football.
It's an interesting, the timeline, I mean, I think we're going to look back. There's going to be like a 3 or 4 or 5 year history of college football that you're going to look back and go, holy crap, that was really strange, right? Like there was a time, like for a long time, USC and UCLA were gone. Then there was a brief moment when Colorado, there was 9. Remember Colorado was out. It's like, what was there, 46 or 47 states before, was it New Mexico and Arizona joint? There was like a 5 year period. You had like this weird flag. Like there was a small, you know, short period where, you know, you didn't get to the 48. And then you added Hawaii and Alaska after that. But it felt weird because there was like 9 schools. And then you hear like people talking about, oh, we can replace Colorado with San Diego State and it'll be just as good. Or like there was this weird little window when like only Colorado had gone before the other 3 schools went. So I don't know, just like thinking about that, I was like, that was a weird little, I don't know how long that lasted, but it was a little period before the other schools left.
Yeah, during that time, I was rooting for that to happen because you knew that Oregon State and Washington State were just going to be left out in the cold. And especially with Oregon State investing all that money into it, it's like, man, like I kind of just was rooting for something to work itself out. But so my heart breaks for those two fan bases. They definitely didn't deserve that. They got a raw deal in this whole thing.
With the move into the Big 12, obviously things change for certain schools. The Arizonas each have a plan to recruit Texas more, recruit, you know, down into the, you know, Southwest a little bit more. Does this change anything for Colorado's recruiting footprint? Does this change anything for the kinds of guys they want to target, the regions they want to target? Is this because I know Colorado didn't shift totally away from its, you know, long-standing strategies when it moved to the Pac-12, but there was a little bit more of a shift into the West. Is this going to shift things back a little bit more?
It's actually going to just kind of fit into what they had already been doing since Coach Prime got to Colorado, right? Because of his ties to Florida and Texas. And so they were already recruiting those areas. And now, so you kind of just throw on to the top of it that we will be playing in your state, not every year in Florida, but you know they travel out this year, so that's something you can point to a Florida prospect. But that said, they only signed 7 high school players
right
in the 2024 class. So most of the impact in terms of their recruiting comes through the portal right now, and so that's going to continue to be national for whatever spots they need to fill from the high school ranks. Though they were already recruiting Georgia, Florida, Texas, and so now you're just in that region a little bit more. So it's a good fit from that standpoint. How long is Coach Prime in Boulder? We don't know. But I think long-term, yes, you will see Colorado maybe recruit Texas a little bit more than and they did historically. You know, even when they were in the Pac-12, they recruited Texas quite a bit. So that'll continue to be fertile recruiting ground for them because the state of Colorado just doesn't produce a whole lot of talent. We've only seen Coach Prime really offer one player in the state in his year and a half in the job. So they've definitely got to go outside of the state to fill out their roster.
West Texas Mike had a question in the chat. By the way, we didn't do the whole preamble, but we're live on YouTube and recording this on our, you know, wherever you can get your podcast. So thank you if you're tuning in live or watching the replay on YouTube. You get to see Adam and all the, are those all races you've run behind you, like your bibs from races?
Yeah.
Oh, congrats. That's awesome, man. They're killing it.
Yeah, I need to get back into it. It's a reminder. That is the crazy thing about the Coach Prime era is I have not hit the treadmill as much as I want to because right. It is nonstop.
It's crazy. Well, what Texas Mike said, my biggest fear would be that Coach Prime would rack up a class of 8 to 12 5-stars. So why hasn't that happened?
Well, their recruiting is top 25 when you look at overall class, and actually they had the best overall class when you take transfers and high school guys in terms of the rankings among future Big 12 programs. So they are recruiting at a pretty high level, and they just landed Jordan Seaton, a 5-star offensive lineman. All our 24/7 recruiting analysts say he's the most college ready offensive tackle in that class, so they've recruited really well. Now do they have the NIL collective that some of those big time programs have? No. So Coach Prime gets them into the discussion and allows them to land a Jordan Seaton. Kormani McLean was a 5-star signee the prior recruiting cycle. So the recruiting has taken a huge jump up, but they can't compete in the NIL collective space with some of these programs. So you're just not going to see them have the number one ranked class at any point, I wouldn't think.
I want to get deeper into that NIL conversation. From a Big 12 perspective, what's your gauge of how Colorado kind of stacks up in terms of funding of NIL with the Big 12 competitors?
Yeah, pretty well. They're especially as long as Coach Prime is in Boulder, right? Because he does actually offer things that are name, image, and likeness, that are not collectives, that you see these guys, you know, Charlie Offerdahl, walk-on running back, was on a Pistachios commercial, and like that basically paid for his education last year. So there is actual NIL opportunities at Colorado because of Coach Prime. And so as long as he's around, they're going to be competitive. You know, I think Oklahoma State, their collective is going to, you know, allow them to out negotiate Colorado with certain recruits, but generally they do fit in there. I mentioned, you know, if you look at the overall class rank, they were number one among future Big 12 programs. So they're right there in the ball game with those schools. And it is going to be crazy. I do see the Big 12 being kind of like the Pac-12 was some years, where it's just going to be, they're going to be kind of cannibalizing each other because there's so much parity in the conference and there's not this huge gap. And so it'll make for a lot of fun football, but you're going to have probably jumbled standings because there's not going to be a whole lot separating these programs from a talent standpoint.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I mean, there's just a lot of good teams, right? And there's maybe not a couple of elite, but there might be some years, but a lot of really good teams. So you should have some awesome games up and down the slate there. Philip had a question in the chat. He wanted me to ask you about his thoughts on the reports that Colorado rushing to leave the Pac, signing onto a 99-year deal, opening themselves up to lawsuits for Oregon State and Washington State, all while Utah refused to sign the 99-year deal. I'm not sure. Have I even heard about that? Do you know this, David?
No.
I'm not sure what this 99-year deal is. Do you know what this is? Or
no.
Okay. Well, then, Philip. Sorry, we don't know.
please clarify.
Yeah, we don't. 99-year deal.
None of us will be here in 99 years to worry about like that. That's right?
That's like if you like buy property in Mexico, it's like a 99-year lease.
I think we're going to all be uploading our psyches to the cloud by then.
You think so?
Yeah, we'll just exist in a internet of sorts. Think
how many horrible people would be like saved in the cloud? Like,
God damn! You're just stuck there for eternity.
Yeah, like I don't know if I want.
Throw some dirt on me. I'm done. I'm out of here. I'm done.
Where'd we go?
So, here? All right. So, you mentioned kind of offhand, you know, who knows how long Deion Sanders is going to still be in Boulder. This has been, I mean, it's been a topic basically since he took the job, which is, well, how long is he going to stick with this? Is it going to be 2 years? Is it going to be a year? Is it going to be, you know, just a stepping stone until he gets his next big job or what have you? What's your sense of it? And what's your sense of his continuing appetite for college football? Because, you know, he made obviously a long career in the NFL as well. And college is changing in so many ways that, you know, even sitting head coaches from Power Five schools decide they want to be an offensive coordinator somewhere else.
No one would do that. No that one doesn't would do make that. Any sense.
Sitting, you know, Boston College head coach.
Not from a Power Five program.
Goes to
maybe
be
from a, like a basketball school.
Goes to be an NFL assistant. The NFL job is obviously, can be a lot easier. So I guess, and that's all just kind of preamble, but what's your sense of it? What's your sense of him and what his appetite is for staying at Colorado for, I don't know, even a couple more years?
Well, number one, he's not ever going to coach in the NFL. That's something he's made clear at every opportunity. He has no interest, as he says, in coaching rich guys. Like, he doesn't want to deal with the egos. He really enjoys working with young people and, you know, being a mentor, in a lot of cases, a father figure for a lot of his players. And so, he will stay in the college game coaching as long as he decides to coach. Now, I totally understand the outside thought of, like, Coach Prime in Colorado. It just seems like such kind of a weird fit initially, and you just wouldn't think that he would stay here long term. But by all indications, he's fallen in love with the state, and, you know, the people that even on his son's social media channels, they often talk about how we're going to be here a lot longer than people think. There is still maybe a little bit of fear, just because this will be Shedeur Sanders' last year of college football, Shiloh Sanders' last year of college football, Travis Hunter will be moving on to the NFL, that would, you know, give him an opportunity to go somewhere else and kind of start fresh at that point. But it doesn't seem like that's his indication. Now, I'm not naive. I covered Mel Tucker, who was only at Colorado for 14 months and left in the middle of the night and you know, broke Colorado's fans' hearts. And so there's maybe some PTSD within the fan base here. But the odds are better, I can say confidently, that Coach Prime is a head coach in Boulder in 2025 than him not being the head coach in 2025. And beyond that, I have no idea. He genuinely seems to enjoy you know, the process of being a head coach, and you know, he's somebody that's single and he loves Boulder, and so his sons are trying to find him a property to kind of settle down in Colorado after they take off. Is that 2, 3, 4 years? It's hard to say, but I do think Deion Sanders will be the head coach in Colorado beyond Shador's eligibility.
Yeah, we hope he sticks around. Obviously, it's good for college football. It's good for Colorado. Good for you. I mean, it's a lot more interesting. We appreciate the time. I had one question. I had his picture in here just because he had a huge game against USC. Marion Miller. What he had that like 200 yards in like one half against USC. Did he do much the rest of the year? Like, what happened with him?
He really didn't. That was pretty much all of his yardage. Yeah, 198 yards in the second half. And you know what's awesome is Snoop Dogg got on the phone with Omarion Miller after the game because he enjoyed his performance so much.
That's great. Yeah. I just remember I don't think he had a catch in the first half or something and then like went bananas.
Well, and to do that against USC's defense.
Alex Grinch, man. He
doesn't know Alex Grinch coached defense.
He's now a safeties coach at Wisconsin. I mean, it's a big deal.
Imagine hiring that guy to coach your defensive backfield.
He's actually, I think he's co-DC there too, but yeah, it wasn't very good. But yeah, I just remember I still had his pic. I had like, because I load pictures on here from the games when we're talking like for USC. And then, you know, I'll just grab whatever pictures I had. And then I had his picture on there. And I'm like, I don't think he did anything since then. But that was just this monster breakout game against USC. So I had to bring it up. Anything else, David? We good?
We're good. Thank you so much, Adam. This has been excellent.
Yeah, we appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, guys. Well, I appreciate you guys for continuing to keep this going.
Yeah, we're gonna do our best. Like you said, like we don't know how long Coach Prime is gonna be around. I mean, we don't know how long freaking college football is. I mean, it's gonna be here, but like in what form? There's all this weird talk about
We don't know how long we're going to be around.
No.
We could all drop dead tomorrow.
Yes.
Right?
You know? We could.
The future is not promised.
Way to bring it. I was trying to get Adam, like, you know, get out and get some more bibs, you know, do some more races.
Yeah, no.
What was your, like, do you like 10K guy, or were you doing bigger ones, like half marathons or marathon, like?
Yeah, I've done a marathon, and those just hurt a lot, and I have to take breaks, and I think maybe next year I'll be ready, but half marathon is a distance that I prefer, but I like doing a lot of the races with our kids, too, so 5K is just get out to kind of enjoy the event, but yeah, a half marathon is a good distance. That's kind of the limit of where my body wants to kind of shut things down. When I did my last marathon in San Diego, I got to the 22-mile mark, and if I didn't have to keep going to get somewhere, like I didn't know where I was. I was like in San Diego, so I had no choice. I had to keep going, but
like Uber. Yeah,
that was not a fun experience. But
I think it should be noted, the first guy to run a marathon, this guy Fidipides, he dropped dead immediately after finishing the race. So 13.1, that seems fine. Don't need to go the 26.2. That's okay.
The people that run like 50-mile, 100-mile
ultra marathoners, insane.
That nuts.
Yeah.
No, that seems...
The Badlands run to the base of Mount Whitney through, I think, Death Valley or whatever? No. Unacceptable.
That seems very horrible. Yeah. But good luck. And, you know, enjoy spring practice out there. Get out there, do some races. Maybe it'll slow down a little bit. But we appreciate you coming on. Adam Munster-Tiger over at BuffStampede.com. Thanks again for joining us, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. We'll see you.
Thank you, Adam.
Nice, everybody. Okay, we will be back. We're going to take a quick break and be back in a minute. All righty.
I'm not very centered.
You are now.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Can you see the two? Are you seeing the two shots?
No, what I'm seeing is an advertisement.
Yeah.
I don't know. Which way should I go?
No.
This way?
You're perfect right there. Actually,
go this way.
Yeah, you're good.
No. Now I'm better.
Yeah, you're good.
I'm better now.
Well, that was good. Adam Munster-Tiger.
You said that with a note of surprise in your voice. Adam is always good.
It is good.
He's charming. He's Adam charming.
Very charming man.
Yeah.
Schedule looks interesting. I mean, I think you probably won't have people picking them to win the national championship this year. There was so much hype last year. And then to win those games early, I think it just kind of put everything into, like, you know, it was just craziness, right?
So yeah, bad situation.
Yeah. Now, you get different conference, some interesting games, but, you know, you can't have those 29-point leads blown like against the Stanford or something. But there's a lot of good teams you got to play. Like, everyone's pretty decent. Like, if you don't show up, you can lose every week. But you can win, you know. There's no one that you're on your schedule that's like juggernaut that you can't beat. So, it'll be interesting to see. Do you know what their over-under total is?
I don't know if those have been
I think FanDuel has been doing them.
Hang on. Let me look this information up for you. Yeah. It's set at 4.5.
4.5.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you lean towards?
I like to get closer before I start doing that stuff, but if you're going to force me to do it, I'm going to do it game by game right now. I would say they will beat North Dakota State at home.
Okay. They're good.
They will lose at Nebraska. They will win at Colorado State. They will split Baylor and UCF. Pick one. I don't care. So they're 3-2 at that point. Lose to Kansas State. Lose at Arizona. Beat Cincinnati. So they're 4-5, I think. 4-4. I'd take the over.
I think I'm leaning towards the over, too.
Yeah, I think among those last... Now, they end on a bit of a gauntlet. At Texas Tech, then Utah, then at Kansas, then Oklahoma State at home. But I think in aggregate, they probably take one of those. So, yeah, give me 5-7 at least. So, yeah, I think that's probably reasonable expectations. And then, I mean, we'll hear more about who these transfers are and how they will impact once we get into spring, and then we might all have a better idea of whether it's, you know, whether it's a bowl team or not.
Yeah, we'll see. Did you remember what you picked last year? I had them
over, but I don't remember what. I can pull up our spreadsheet.
I had them at 2-10, I think.
Yeah, you were very bad.
Which
on
was
that.
Like two more than they won the year before. That's a big improvement, you know.
Sure, sure. That's a thing worth saying.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can pull it up. Let me see if I can find it. No, that's not it. So, everyone, do you know what I'm doing right now? I think a certain type of person knows what I'm doing right now. I've gone into sheets.google.com, okay, and I am paging through all of the different documents I have in there. Am I looking for a specific title? You know I'm not. What am I doing? I am opening several different untitled spreadsheets, and I am looking for the one that has our list of stuff. Now, I've done this several times.
I title everything.
You think at some point I would just click up there, because it's not hard. It's not like Microsoft Word back in the day. It's not you have to save as and change the name. No, no, no. I could literally just go into the top of the sheet once I get in there, once I find it again, and type a name, just any name. Doesn't really need to be anything. It could be Ryan's a dumbass, but then I would remember that it's Ryan's a dumbass. Will I do that? No. In the next minute, I'm going to find it. And I'm not going to say...
Dude, that's the first thing that comes up. When I open a new sheet, it's like you start default typing up there. You actively avoid giving it a title.
Mm-hmm.
You have to like try to not give it a title.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't go that far. But there it is. Found it. All right. You had 2-10. I had 5-7.
Okay. So we're both wrong.
We were both wrong, but I was less wrong.
Yeah, but you were overly optimistic.
I was much less wrong.
Oh, they did get not much less, like half.
Significantly less.
Half, you know, one game less.
I mean, percentage-wise, significantly less.
One game.
I don't know about
one. Uno.
I don't know about that.
There was one of those things, too, where people like start talking trash, like Colorado's 3-0, and you're like, oh, yeah, well, you lost 8 of your last 9. So end up being a little closer than what we thought. All right, we got some sort of, I don't know what we, do I have the thing here?
Sound off in the chat if you leave your documents and spreadsheets untitled far too often.
Right. And that would put you in the Zodiac Killer category.
No. Zodiac Killer is meticulously organized.
Okay.
Yeah. You have to be.
So I would be
if
more,
you're an uncaught serial killer, like if I was a serial killer, I'd be caught in a second.
Yes,
because there'd be something that was just like you didn't clean the blood off your feet.
We found your ID at the
Like, oh wow, really elaborate killing method. That was really creative, very interesting. But you left your fingerprints over everything.
There are new rules in college football, so we are now going to have a 2-minute warning. The end of the second quarter, end of the fourth quarter, they're saying that's not to add more commercials. That'll take it from somewhere else. Who knows? But we're going to get a 2-minute warning now. They did sort of shorten the games a little bit last year where you don't have stoppages on, first downs until you get to the last 2 minutes. So this is kind of a delineation of like, okay, all those like in the last 2-minute rules will come after the 2-minute warning. So that's kind of interesting. We'll also have in-helmet communication like the NFL. So one player on each side of the ball will be able to communicate with the sidelines. That'll be interesting. There's even talk about a draft. I don't know, but that's not a rule change. So the in-helmet communication. I think there was one other one too, one other rule change. But what are your thoughts on the new rules?
All horrible and the continued professionalization of the actual game on the field, which is stupid. It's all dumb. It's all stupid shit. Just go back to the first down being, stop the clock. You don't need a 2-minute warning.
You don't need a 2-minute
It's stupid. This is all trying to make college football more like the NFL. And once you make it most like the NFL. I am sure at some point we're going to get the hash marks moved in so that you don't get the wide hashes anymore. You don't get the crazy stuff that can happen in the run game because of it. I'm sure we're going to get all that. And it's stupid. It's bad. It doesn't differentiate the sport anymore. And once you don't differentiate the sport, then people can starkly recognize hey, this is just a much shittier version of this version. So why don't I just watch that? It's a bunch of people who don't care about the sport.
Okay. So there's your thoughts there.
Anyway, the in-helmet communication is fine. But the 2-minute warning is stupid.
Even in the NFL, we have problems. If it's the Chargers, you know, playing the Rams and they're on the sideline and the Chargers helmets aren't working, then they make an announcement and they have to shut the Rams helmets off too. You know, NFL, you're talking 32 teams and they have had problems. We're going to, you know, what do we have? 134 FBS teams. There's going to be games where like just shit doesn't work. So that'll be kind of interesting.
And the cool thing is NFL teams have, 40-hour prep weeks or 50-hour prep weeks where they can come up with elaborate hand signals and all that kind of shit. Do you think college football teams are going to waste time on that now that they have helmet communication when they've got a limited amount of time during the week? I don't know. And so when the helmets inevitably don't work, you're going to have some really funny things.
Well, I think from what I've been reading, it sounds like there's still going to be the people that holds up a sign that has like a picture of like Gandhi and a xylophone and then like a manhole cover or whatever it is. You know, you hold the sign up and that means something. I think they're still going to do that because it's probably hard to communicate everything through one person. So maybe, you know, especially no huddle teams or receivers going to like, you know, the receivers might be looking at the sidelines to see what the call is more than the quarterback telling him what to do. So there could be, I think there's going to be some of that. So I don't think the signs and stuff are going away. So there, and some schools might not even do it, but I think they wanted more communication, but it's because you have 134 teams. Like,
look, it's
everyone can't afford to have like, you know, all these helmets.
It's a bone thrown to all the people who are whining about Michigan sign stealing. Like that's what this is.
This is, yeah. Connor Stallions.
100% what it is. And that was a bunch of whiny people who couldn't deal with the fact that Michigan was beating their ass. And that's fundamentally what it is. It's Ryan Day being an absolute just wuss. And the thing is, like, sign stealing is fine, and it's no big deal. And if you're a good team, you don't have to worry about it. And this is just, you know, it's fine. I mean, this won't have a significant impact on the game, but it's yet another thing that's just making things more NFL-y.
Yeah, apparently, and I'd read like Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, like they were trying to practice this stuff because they started spring practice or they're about to, and there was like a shortage, like trying to get just the communication helmet. So like, I don't know. Yeah, like this is kind of thrown out there and I don't know if people were ready for it. So that'll be kind of interesting. They also talk about, do you ever think that we could have a draft in college football? Like that's something that's been discussed a lot. Basically, like recruiting would not exist and you would be, you know, these guys are going to be employees at some point.
Yeah, I mean, all this dog shit could happen. That only happens, though, if there's a limited number of teams. So once you get a Big Ten SEC Super League of the best teams from each league playing, whatever, let's call it 32 teams, because that's the way this is going. 16 teams from each or whatever it is. And then they all agree on a salary cap. They all agree that they're going to fund their programs X amount. And then they have those governed by statute. Then you can have a draft. But that would be worse. That would be significantly worse. Like the NFL, I don't know. Like I have no interest in the NFL. None. Because it's got that like every one of these teams is the same. Like they're all the same. They all have to be governed by the exact same. It's like the people get really into F1 and it's like, they've got the same budget for the car. Like, what are we doing here? It's who cares? Like, oh, I can make this minute difference in my budget. And there's this general sameness to the quality of the product. College football, it's eclectic and you can have situations where, because Boise State is competing for the same prize as Alabama, they have to innovate at a weird level to make it work. And they have to innovate at a weird level. And they also have to get great recruiters to get talent that they otherwise wouldn't get from, you know, Alabama or whatever. They have to out-evaluate everyone. But if you do it with a draft and you get all this parity among these teams, you flatten everything. You kind of flatten the ability for there to be outside influences, for there to be innovation and creativity. I think it's, you know, it's the NFL has taken a lot of its innovation over the years from college football, like from a stylistic schematic standpoint, because that's where, and college football has taken it from the high school level, which, you know, there can be a lot of it there. I think anything that continues to stifle that element of college football is losing a huge part of what makes college football interesting and fun to watch. So, yes, there could be a draft at some point. It requires all those things first. It probably also requires some sort of carve out in national legislation, because you need to have something that's says, okay, no, this barrier to entry is totally okay. But yeah, I mean, it's totally possible. I would say that's the glide path we're on, is towards some sort of super league that has a draft, so that these guys don't have to worry about recruiting anymore and can make it much more like the NFL.
I think you're right, though. It would have to be the super league thing. And I think it was, I think Trent Dilfer came out recently and was saying, it's like they're like 18 months away. He thinks they're 18 months away from having like a super league. Like, he thinks this is happening like fast. All the playoff talk is going on now, expanding, where the Big Ten and the SEC want first round buys and all this kind of stuff. There's a lot of weird stuff going on, but the sport is changing quickly. And if Dilfer's right, like, we could have a very, very different landscape coming up. But I think that your point about, you can't have a draft now. Like, if you're like, oh, like, is the Big Ten and the SEC going to have their own draft, and then the Big 12 and the ACC have their own draft, or how would that work? And if you get drafted by Vanderbilt and you're like not that smart of a student, like, I don't want to go play at Vanderbilt, you know, like, or I'm going to go to the group of five or whatever it is. I think you need that super league kind of thing for that to work. And it sounds like we're getting.
And that's going to be much worse. And when you hear the news about a potential 14 team playoff, it's not a goddamn coincidence that the NFL playoff is 14 teams. Like, that's not a fucking coincidence. It's 14 teams because they eventually want to have a 32-team Super League, and they want to be matching the NFL. Why? Because these people don't give a shit about college football. They don't care about college football, and they're like, hey, that NFL model works. Let's match it as much as we can. Let's match it completely, because they make a lot of money.
I think they'd have to do bigger than 32, though. I think it'd be, you know.
Why? Why do you think that?
Because there's just too many brands, you know. Like, if you're 32 teams, you're leaving out, like, the Utahs of the world.
Uh-huh. Probably. Yes, you are.
I don't think they want to do that.
They're not letting Utah into a Super League.
You don't think so?
No chance.
You're going to really upset Amy in the chat, by the way.
No, I don't think Utah fans have any expectation they're going to be in a Super League. No, it's going to be the top 75% of the SEC, the top 75% of the Big Ten, and then Florida State and Miami and a couple others, and that's going to be it.
Wow. See, that's very, like, I would think it's a bigger one.
Budget. It's all about budget. It's all about your ability to contribute at the level necessary to buy into a super league. That's what it's going to require. It's going to require each of these schools investing X amount of dollars into the creation of this entity, and then they're all bought in, and then their whole thing is going to be keeping teams out. And keeping them out.
So you think they're going to, like, get rid of Vanderbilt and Indiana?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, see, I think there's no friends in this anymore.
I think there's going to be grandfathered in, because it's going to have SEC and Big Ten. I don't think they're going to be able to get rid of them.
You got to remember, the people in charge do not give a fuck about any of that stuff.
All right.
At all.
Tony Petitti, for Big Ten, he seems like he is, like, they're talking about, people are like, I wish I had Kevin Warren back. Like, he seems like a bulldog. He might be part of the reason why they're, like, demanding first round buys. Could you imagine, like, you know, a 10-3, like, Ohio State wins the Big Ten championship and they get a first round buy, and Florida State's, you know, 13-0 and undefeated, and they're going to be like a 3 seed because the Big Ten is guaranteed a 1 or 2. Like, what? That stuff like that would be crazy. But we could be going there.
Yeah.
Also, UCLA got a new offensive coordinator.
Yep.
That we talked about on this show, and what were our thoughts on Eric Bieniemy?
I don't remember what we were talking about on the show.
Did we not?
I don't remember.
Maybe it came up on my show.
Maybe. People were asking. I don't know. Eric Bieniemy was hired as UCLA's offensive coordinator, taking over for former offensive coordinator Chip Kelly. Yeah, I mean, it's much better hire than they could have made. David Shaw is looming in the background of every scene involving UCLA because his son is a walk-on.
That would have been so good.
So hiring a former, you know, NFL offensive coordinator who's well thought of from his time at the Chiefs, certainly better than that. Now, my preference always would be to hire a college offensive coordinator to run a college offense. But if you're going to go the NFL route, Bieniemy makes sense. Now, his Commanders offense wasn't good, but there were a lot of issues with the Commanders. They were running something called a Sam Howell was their quarterback.
Yes. It's a little different than a Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. Who knows? So that wasn't good. But he was really well thought of from his time with the Chiefs.
Yes.
Andy Reid has given him a huge stamp of approval. Patrick Mahomes has talked well of him. I truly don't know. I know him from his time as a recruiter at UCLA when he was a running backs coach. He was pretty good, and he successfully recruited Maurice Drew to UCLA. And then I know him from his stint with Colorado where they had very bad offenses. But that was under John Embry. Talent was poor. Overall team was a disaster.
Embry bad.
So I can't take too much from that. Also don't know what to take from the Commanders. And he was the offensive coordinator for an offensive coach who calls his own plays. So all of that, I think it's an unknown. But he's got a pedigree. I think that pedigree will play in recruiting. I think a big factor is how much energy does he still have for recruiting at, you know, last time he was heavily recruiting was 12 years ago. He's now in his mid-50s. You know, that drive, my drive to talk to 17-year-old kids and ask them where they're going to school when I have no investment in it is limited. I can't imagine what it'll be 17 years from now, which is where Eric Bieniemy is right now, when you actually have to be invested in it and want them to come to your school. So anyway, we'll see, but it's a lot better than it could have been.
Yeah. You go back at our YouTube channel and look at David and I from what year was that? 2015.
Oh boy, yeah.
Going over like recruiting classes for USC and UCLA.
Can we even name recruits anymore?
In a park, like I was like, "Holy shit!" I knew a lot about recruiting then. Like, nope, don't like.
Part of that for me though is the Chip Kelly era where they didn't. Oh, they probably didn't know the recruits.
They didn't
either.
Really recruit. They kind of like checked out of that game. It's interesting because like, yeah, it's hard to tell when you're like, I'm the offensive coordinator, but you know, Patrick Mahomes is, you know, you got Reed as the head coach and you got Mahomes as the quarterback. His name was coming up for head coaching NFL jobs then.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. Then he gets the Commanders OC job and it, you know, doesn't go very well. And there was a lot of openings. No one was sniffing for a head coach job. No one in the NFL was really sniffing him for an OC job. So this is kind of interesting to see, you know, what, you know, it's hard to say. Like, I agree with all your takes. You're sort of like, well, what do you take away from this? What do you take from this? There's some good and some bad. But I think under the circumstances, like, yeah, you just hired an NFL OC. He's been at your school before. He's been in the West Coast before. I think Deshaun Foster is it's a crapshoot, right? We have no idea, but this is probably more stable than like a Deshaun Foster hire, but again, there's still some element of who the hell knows.
Totally. Yeah, and I think that's probably the best way to put it is it's definitely a more of a known factor than Deshaun Foster, but it's still in the, like, if you're pointing it like unknown or known, it's more of an unknown. We'll see. Again, it's nothing that you can categorically say, oh, that's going to be a disaster. So you got to wait and see.
Yeah. All right. Was there anything else from the world of college football that you wanted to discuss? We got a couple big voicemails.
Yeah, let's move on to the voicemails.
And we got some chats. But let's start with the aforementioned Zodiac Killer.
Well, well, well. Hello, Ryan. Hello, Sith Lord Dave. That's right. It's me, the resident Stanford fan. Been a while. I've been reveling in the glory of killing an entire conference. Anyone can kill a person. If you really want to feel alive, try killing a whole conference. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. It's a new day for everyone, but I go to listen to this show, and I have to listen to the same old sad intro every single show. The mediocre Matt Leinart 1 yard quarterback sneak for a USC touchdown. The inimitable Jim Mora era Miles Jack touchdown. And of course, the most tragic moment in the history of college football, the 1982 big game when Dirty Golden Bear cheated, were down multiple times, still somehow pulled off a last second touchdown against my beautiful Stanford Cardinal. A clip at least, which includes the greatest marching band in the history of college football. So I guess my question is, can we do a new intro? And if so, what moments will we put on there to spice it up? You know, dawn of the new era. I do have a couple thoughts. If we have to include a USC highlight, how about the 2007 USC Stanford game when a 41-point favorite led by Pete Carroll were scored on in the waning seconds by a checks note. Kavita Pritchard led Stanford team the last second touchdown in the corner of the end zone, a beauty. If we have to include a UCLA highlight, what about a checks note? Jim Mora led defense when they tried to tackle Christian McCaffrey to the tune of 573 yards of total offense in a single game for the former Stanford legend. And of course, we were just going to go with a pure Stanford highlight. How about, I don't know. How about any of the 2010s? How about we just announce them as the team of the 2010s? I'd love to hear what the readers think. Love to get some fresh ideas. And I would be willing to put together a mock-up, a new intro, if you boys would be willing to play it on air. Keep it mediocre, fellas.
He's speaking our language. Like, if you're going to do free? The work, we'll do it. Yeah.
We take free.
Yeah.
We take nothing we have to work on. Great thoughts. I would think another one would be good is if we can get the enhanced audio of the Jim Harbaugh, Pete Carroll interaction after the 2009 game, I think it was. The What's Your Deal game.
What's Your Deal would be good.
Yeah, if we can get the What's Your Deal enhanced audio.
We just talked about the 29-point comeback.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of kicks. We did a lot of field goals.
Just absolutely nothing but Stanford highlights.
Yeah. How about the Ed Orgeron one? Was it 2014 where Stanford got it like in USC territory, like USC inside the USC 30?
If we can get the audio
50 times and they scored like 9 points.
If we can get the audio of Jim Harbaugh saying, I think he said this publicly, we just kept running the same play after I think Toby Gerhart ran for like 200 plus yards against UCLA 1 year.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We just kept running the same play and they never did anything to stop it.
Yeah.
That might have just been a thing.
Justin Wilcox in the press box, I think it was the 2017.
Oh, screaming.
What year was it? It was for the Pac-12 championship game.
Yeah.
And like Christian McCaffrey is running all over USC's defense. And we're in the press box literally. And the USC defensive coaches were right, the next wall. You could hear Wilcox just like screaming. He was so pissed off.
Yeah. The other important note is I haven't listened to our intro in probably 7 years.
Oh, I listen to it all the time because I have to edit this stuff.
Oh, weird. Interesting. Yeah. I don't listen to the whole thing even when I have to edit it. I just kind of scoop it into Audacity.
Yeah, I've kind of do that too. Yeah, but
come on.
But I still, I'll listen sometimes.
Yeah, you just like to listen to the sound of your own voice.
It's not us mostly. Mm. And then we're redundant, because you don't listen to the intro, so we say the same shit after the intro too.
True.
We probably need to change the intro. Maybe not as Stanford focused as the Zodiac Killer would like, but we are, open to suggestions.
We've established enough that we could probably do a lot of bits from the show in there too.
Oh yeah, that would take a lot of work though. Go to find.
Well, that's a West Texas Mike job because he's got all the bits.
He does get a lot of bits. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we have thoughts. We have absolutely no desire to do any of that work, though.
Yeah. I mean, you know, really, honestly, like, the show could die. Like, we're going to do one more year of this. If it's like, if we're covering 12 schools across four conferences, two of them somewhere.
Yeah, this might become a lifestyle pod.
Like, this is, like, we don't know. We're going to do it. We're going to cover all those teams. But is it by week six, when we're talking about Oregon's trip to Indiana or Cal going to Boston College, like, we might, like, question our lives. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So yeah. We're not making it. We're sort of like, we're like Oregon State and Washington State in kind of wait and see mode. We're just going to see how everything sort of pans out. And maybe we'll see. We got a voicemail from Perk. You want me to play that?
I'd love it if you did.
What's up, guys? It's Perk. I want to say around the time Deshaun Foster was hired by UCLA, Equity Bruin had a tweet, and apologize if I get something wrong, but I'm paraphrasing here. But essentially that UCLA didn't need Deshaun Foster to succeed in terms of wins and losses, but instead to kind of energize the fan base, get buy-in from the donors in UCLA, and more importantly, to get recruiting back to kind of where UCLA could be or should be. And with that in mind, Dave, I'm kind of curious from your perspective, if you were to look 3 or 4 years out, what would have to happen for you to say that the Deshaun Foster hire was a success, and kind of what would have to happen for you to be pleased with how things are? Thanks, guys.
Great question. I think 3 to 4 years out is the wrong time frame, though, because I think the way to assess success is earlier than that. Because once you get to 3-4 years down the road, it's wins on the field.
Yeah.
Like, the only way to assess it is, are they winning 9 games? Are they getting into the conference race in the Big Ten occasionally? Or do they look like they could? So the things we're going to have to see happen more in the next year and a half. And it's all infrastructure. I mean, it's what you attribute to our friend Equity Bruin. Can they get recruiting going again? Can they get NIL, whatever your opinion of it? Can they get the funding to compete in recruiting? And if they can't, we'll know in a year and a half whether they're going to have a chance or not. Year and a half. I mean, I think it's going to be obvious if recruiting is dead in the water going into next recruiting cycle, then we're going to know. We're going to know at that point, because the best recruiting classes for a lot of coaches, it's that essentially first full cycle where they've been there since one signing day, and then it's that second signing day that they're the staff. Well, Deshaun Foster hasn't had that because he didn't get this signing day, but he's going to have a full year leading up to essentially early December and then early February. What's that class going to look like? And what that class is going to look like is going to depend heavily on how he gets NIL straight and how hard he and his staff recruit. And we're going to start seeing signs of that heading into summer. We're going to start seeing signs of that in the season. So I don't think you have to wait that long to have a pretty good idea of whether this is going to work or not. I think it'll be pretty obvious by this time next year.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you want to do some emails?
Let's do a couple.
Quick one from the chat. Addison, more incredible squandering of talent. In their most recent seasons, Lincoln Riley, Chip Kelly, Andy Enfield, or Mick Cronin?
Andy Enfield, by far.
Yeah, they've squandered some talent.
We joke about Lincoln Riley. Chip Kelly honestly didn't squander that much talent. He didn't have much talent. He recruited at the worst level UCLA's ever recruited. Mick Cronin, I mean, you could make an arg this season that they're squandering some talent, but they're super young. Andy Enfield, like, they've had some dudes come through that university, and he is flattening them into mediocrity every single season. Again, I do not understand USC fans who purport to be USC basketball fans, like, not the ones who are just football and they don't really give a shit about basketball like you, but like the people who like actually purport to be basketball fans, they like cape up for this guy. And I'm like, have you no shame? Have you no like expectations whatsoever? You really think it's just good enough to make the NCAA tournament and be, you know, dangerous a couple of times this season? Like, they have enough talent to be good, like legitimately good. And instead, they're just this kind of piece of shit team every year. And it's just, I do not understand that one. So, yeah, it's Enfield for me.
All right. That makes sense. What was the first, I think the first email is Little Brother. Is that right?
Sure. Where are we? Oh, there it is. All right, so this is from our friend Steve, Little Brother. Hello, gentlemen. First time, long time. Look forward to hopefully meeting you guys in Vegas in a few weeks. This was sent 10 days ago. We're going to Vegas next week. Who do you believe has the largest Little Brother complex in the current Pac-12 for the next 4 months? I believe it is ASU, but maybe there is something I'm not thinking of or missing with the other schools, and I would not put the being left behind for Oregon State and Washington State here. Why I believe it is ASU? The only game that the ASU student section is close to capacity is for the Arizona games in Tempe. There are ASU podcasts that talk more about U of A than ASU. Podcasters and writers for ASU openly talk about cheering against U of A as much as cheering for ASU. If you go to an ASU versus U of A game in Tempe, you will see 25 different designs of ASU shirts that make pathetic attempts to slam U of A like no pity for the kitty. The most active threads on the 247 message boards for ASU are all about U of A. I am sure there are some of these things between UCLA and USC, Stanford and Cal, etc., but this seems extremely obsessive. And yes, I get it that I'm asking about ASU being obsessed with U of A while writing an email to a Pac-12 podcast. That is not lost on me. Keep up the slightly above average work, guys. Thank you, Steve. Steve, I look forward to meeting you too, but I do have a thing to say. And it's an important thing to say.
Yeah.
The answer is Arizona, and Arizona behaves like the little brother of so many goddamn schools in this league. All the time. Like the fact that you're
Arizona State?
No, Arizona.
So you're calling him
The out. Fact that Arizona fan is sending this email about ASU fan. I don't get ASU fan emails about Arizona. And like, you're looking at the message board. You're looking at ASU's message board to see how many threads are about Arizona. Like, yeah, they're going to write about you. You're their rival. But like, Arizona does this a lot with a lot of fam. And I have the experience on the basketball side with UCLA. And it's like, look, it's a rivalry. So you're going to have threads on each message board about
like
the other
UCLA
one.
UCLA is like the little but brother it's like Arizona, for Arizona basketball, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's like Arizona fan gets like angry about it. And it's like, no. It's just, this is just a rivalry. That's all it is. It's just a rivalry. And it just, look, and I think part of it, and this is my fairness to Arizona fans, I think a lot of people insult Tucson. They insult Arizona as like also ran school and all this kind of shit. And it's fucked up. Like Tucson's a decent enough place. I've spent some time there. But we make jokes about these things. We make jokes about Arizona as like an academic institution. And so I think there's a permanent chip on the shoulder about this. But then it displays. And when that chip on the shoulder displays, people then, you know, say some things about that too. So I guess my thing is, I would say, in that relationship, I wouldn't say it's ASU. And then, the other candidates recently, I've seen Washington State fans, but like Washington State's gotten just absolutely worked by conference realignment. So
yeah.
they can be bitter and little brothery as much as they want. But that's kind of my feeling.
What about like Oregon being like Washington's little brother?
No. I mean, the thing is, when you're like two big,
it's like every time they play, like Washington beats them, but then like, but Oregon's like,
yeah.
But if we played again, we'd beat you.
I think everyone wants to say they're
better team.
Everyone wants to say their rival is. I'm just talking about like which fan base appears most insecure. Like which fan base appears like most like, you know, I need people to respect me. I need people to respect us and like, you know, talking about their fucking history of whatever. And it's just, you know, I get that vibe from Arizona. I don't ever get ASU fans being like, you need to respect our football program. It was good 26 years ago. I don't get that.
No, I don't either.
So I go it on an insecurity scale.
Gotcha. Frank says, win total projections, right or wrong. Sportsbooks have USC's win total at 7.5. And then he has UCLA at 7, and he says, how right or wrong are they? And he says, wait, no, UCLA is only 5.5. How wrong is that with Eric Bieniemy coming in as the Bruins OC? So USC plus or minus or whatever, over under 7.5, and UCLA over under 5.5. Where would you fall?
For UCLA, I'd go under right now. For USC,
Jeez.
Their schedule is tough, like LSU, Notre Dame, out of conference. But it's not, they don't play Oregon or Ohio State. I think I would go, I think they're going to, like, I think 8-4 is a good number.
Yeah, I'd probably go over for USC. Utah State's nice, getting that at home. And LSU, they could win that game in a neutral site. Yeah, I'd go 8-4 for USC. So I'd go over for USC. I'd go under for UCLA.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. Next up, we've got something from NATO.
It's a duck fan.
It's a screenshot from your website.
Yes, it's a message board.
Please make it stop. This is from one of your posters, One Rubbish. All the Horgon talk on the board. Damn Gina. They offer the same kid. Here comes the Horgon talk. They get the kid we both offered. Here comes the Horgon talk. Someone on their staff goes and takes a piss. Here comes the Oregon talk. Someone on our staff goes and takes a piss. Here comes the Oregon talk. Sheesh. Rather they drop 50 million bags or not, I'm convinced some enamored USC fan with a hidden love for Oregon will find a way to bring Oregon but to the USC forum, bring Oregon out to the USC forum. Yeah, it's CFB, but that particular school stays on the minds of members of this board way more than others. The minute they recruit the same kid, the fear sets in. Hella weird. Fight on. So that's a inferiority complex thing going on
gotcha.
There for the USC fan. Okay. Is that it?
We had one more comment on the – oh, actually, no, I don't think we did. Let's see. Nope. Yeah, I think we're good with the chat and everything.
Point of order. We are still doing a thing next week, next Friday. I think we're full up on RSVPs. However, if you did not RSVP to the event we're doing on Friday with In Partnership, the No Truck Stops pod, and by In Partnership, I mean we have put our names on it, and Carlos, our friend Equity Bruin, has done all of the planning.
Much, much work.
0% has been done by us. If you're not going to that, we will still be in Vegas. Our teams may or may not be still playing after Wednesday.
They might be playing each other on
Wednesday. They might be playing each other on Wednesday and then never playing again. So we'll be there. If you're going to be there, we'd love to see you. So, yeah. You know, shoot an email.
Email us, tweet us, something like that. But, yeah, the event will be starting at 2 o'clock, so it's before the semifinals on
But if you're not already Friday. RSVP'd, you can't go. Sorry.
Yeah, so it's like a reservation kind of thing or whatever. But we'd love to meet you out for a drink because David and I tend to do that when we're in Vegas. We have some drinks. We gamble. We'll let you know what casino we're at and what where we're going to be playing. Are you going to do video poker this time?
That's how I get the Royal Flushes, baby.
I know. You do like the Royal Flushes. We'll do some blackjack.
Some craps.
Maybe craps.
Maybe.
Because it's always so expensive, you know?
Yeah. I thought we were going to go downtown and try
to do craps.
We could do
that. I like Ellis Island.
Yeah, let's go downtown and do craps.
Ellis Island. I don't know if Ellis Island is considered downtown, but it's down. Is that?
No. Let's go downtown and do craps because downtown craps, you can get $5 tables still.
I think Ellis Island, you can get maybe 10.
You can get five. Five.
Okay.
See, count the fingers. Count them for me.
Yeah.
Count them.
We got five there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. But yeah, well, we can maybe.
That's great, though. Ryan can visually count. So he didn't have to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He was able to look and say, oh, that is the representation of five. That's a big thing in early childhood development.
I've high-fived you before, and mm-hmm. I remember counting the fingers then, so I didn't have to recount them.
That's great. It's a representative of five. It's like dice counting. Like if you teach your kids to dice count, you're teaching them an entirely different method of recognizing a count than you are by like ones and fingers.
So when you're teaching your kids to play craps is what you're talking
about. It's important. It's actually really important because then they represent the thing.
How's Berkeley at the craps? Beginning.
She's great at math. That kid is great at math. I could go places with that kid.
Good.
Yeah. But it's hugely important. It's all part of, kind of that abstract thinking. It's the beginning of that. So Ryan, this is five. You know that.
We'll go downtown. We'll play some craps. Get some $5 tables. All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. Yeah. Thanks to Adam Munstertiger for joining us on our little show. Where do we go next? Do you want to do the the castaways? Should we do like the Washington State, Oregon State next? Do you want to? Where do you feel like we should go?
Dealer's choice. You're the one who's organizing all of this, so I'm fine with those. I think we could do a double dip on Cal and Stanford and not force Jackson to do it twice.
Yeah,
so we could
that's
also
easy.
Do that next.
Okay.
But whichever. I would fine with any of those, and then let's do the Big Ten schools last.
Okay, we'll do the Big Ten. Well, we already did UCLA too, but I guess we could do it.
Well, whatever. Maybe by the time we would get around to UCLA, it'll be interesting again to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I'll be over my trauma.
Right. And like the reason David brought up Arizona being like, you know, the little brother syndrome is just because it's Pac-12 tournament time.
And, well, also they play tonight.
And Arizona just usually beats the snot out of
everybody
in the tournament.
In
Vegas. And Arizona fans are the most obnoxious. Like, they overwhelm the whole T-Mobile arena.
Take a step back for a second. One thing that I have to do all the time, especially when Arizona is poised to beat the ever-living fuck out of UCLA, which is potentially going to happen tonight, is you do have to start negging them really hard and saying, oh, well, it's your Super Bowl. You know, this is the most important thing in the world for you. So I have to then say, well, Arizona fans, you're really insecure because this is your Super Bowl, beating a 14 and 15 UCLA on the road. It's only because this is not a basketball show that I don't do the same thing about Arizona that I do to USC in football.
Right.
Yeah.
They throttled Oregon. Like,
yeah,
do you think Arizona is just going to, like, because Washington State's good. Everyone else kind of stinks. But, like, I it's hard to pick against Arizona, right? Just because they just win every game. And
yeah.
Lloyd's never lost in Vegas, right? Like, he's never lost there.
That might be true. I'm not sure.
I think so.
I think that's probably true.
I'm going to give you my basketball knowledge, David. All right. But yeah, we will be in Vegas next week. So, we got to see. Should we do a show from Vegas? Maybe we should do our show in Vegas.
Yeah, maybe we do like Thursday before things get going.
Okay. I'd have to bring my equipment and stuff, but.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's
I don't
fine.
Have to do it.
Right.
Are you driving?
I am going to fly.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to, because
I'm You're turning over a new leaf in so many ways.
I'm going to the next week. And I'm going to drive because I'm golfing. So I'll just bring my clubs.
Are you bringing any of your people or are you covering this solo?
I am solo.
You didn't want to invest a bunch of money in an 11-seed
UCLA? I have somebody there for the women's tournament because USC is actually good.
Yeah, they are. And so is UCLA.
UCLA's good. Stanford's good. A lot of Pac-12 teams are good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Ahmad, one of my writers, was really interested in covering it. And I'm like, it probably doesn't make financial sense, but, you know, it's like, all right.
Yeah.
He's been doing a good job, like, covering the team, so I'll throw him a bone and send him out there. And it could be fun. They play Arizona today, I think, and then – or tonight or today or whatever. But, yeah, we'll be out there. Maybe USC and UCLA play on Wednesday night, and then we're just partying the rest of the time. Well, I guess one of us would have to work if that's the case. Yeah, hopefully they don't play each other, and then they both lose, and we can just party the rest of the way. Is that the way it should go?
I'm not allowed to say. I'm not allowed to advocate for
I'm
that.
I'm not rooting for like them, you know. But USC is actually the men's team.
I don't want to happen.
They're playing better.
What happened last time when the final day, was that going into Friday where we were up until 11 in the morning?
That was for Saturday.
Took a two-hour nap
that was
and
Friday
then had
night.
To go over to the stadium?
Yeah, I just had to retell that story. We had like a USC media luncheon yesterday. There was
I don't think I can physically do that again. I think that was my final window of being able to do that at 36, and now at 38 I can't.
Paramedics were called.
Not for us. For someone much younger.
Someone much younger that they thought was my kid. And I'm like, no, I just met him tonight. But here, paramedics. So Dave and I are like 7 a.m. We're like the last people standing or whatever time it was. And then we're like, let's go get breakfast. And then I ordered a bottle of champagne.
And screaming about Elon Musk in the middle of breakfast at America.
It was in New York, right?
Yeah, at America.
Yeah, I had a big donut, but we split a bottle of champagne, had mimosas.
Chicken and waffles.
Chicken and waffles. And like, I think it was like we went to bed at 11 a.m. and then...
Had to get up at like 1:30 to go back over to the
stadium.
That
was rough. But yeah, we definitely, we outlasted everybody.
Yeah.
including like a 24-year-old that had to go to the hospital.
Oh, my God.
And David hit a royal flush.
He sure did. He sure did.
We were up so late. It was the working girls came to the bar like after their shift. So it was like 5 something in the morning. And they were like –
if you want to be a part of this.
Yes.
Definitely hit us up.
This isn't what Carlos has planned. Like, I don't think this is
– No.
Maybe he'd be, you know – he can plan a nice, you know.
Event. Carlos seems like a guy who goes to bed at 7:45 p.m.
I don't know about that.
8:15.
Should we do what? We should probably do one night like 2 years ago.
I don't know. I don't know if we should do that like 2 years ago, but like 60% of.
Because we started. I think it was it Ben Bulch's room or Brian Karchi's room? Like, what was it?
Ryan Karchi's room.
The LA Times guys, and then Ben, I think, brings wine.
Yes, he's a wine guy.
We didn't finish working until like close to midnight. So like, then we're drinking wine, and then we go to the casinos, and there was a lot. There was debauchery everywhere. It was great.
Much too much.
Yeah.
All right.
I guess we should wrap things up. For David Woods, he's right there. I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
You're over there.
I am.
Bye.